Wilson, Digital Documentation Manager at Historic Environment Scotland, and her talk is entitled Delivering Digitally, Focused Applications for Historical Environment. Dr. Lynn Wilson is a heritage scientist with over 20 years' experience in digital documentation practice and conservation and archaeological science. She has a BSc in archaeology, MA and a PhD in archaeological science. At AGS, Lynn is responsible for all the exciting things such as 3D recording of the properties and collections in the care, and this 3D data is used for conservation, asset management, interpretation, education and to improve accessibility. Based at HES's engine shed, which we haven't been to, but recommend a trip, up to Stirling on the train, her role there involves leading and enabling the executive of strategic development and application of innovative and cutting-edge digital technologies for the benefit of cultural heritage. Lynn's also a specialist assessor on digital documentation to the British Council's Cultural Protection Fund, an expert member of the International Committee for Documentation of Cultural Heritage, and also a board member of the UK Scientific Committee on Digital Heritage Technologies, which should be of interest to some of us here. Her research interests focus on the intersection of heritage science and digital documentation in the historic environment and the application of these emerging technologies for conservation. She's a passionate advocate, she says, for the integration of science and technology within cultural heritage practice. So, with all that, with our own sort of streets and fine buildings, something I've come up with here, the fine buildings all around us, and our own interests in GIS and archaeology, what better way to start than we introduce Lynn Wilson.
Remix to document all of these ancillary and operational depots as well. We categorise our monuments in six different different ways. We have approximately a third of them are A and B, which are roofed buildings, effectively castles like Edinburgh. We then have the categories C and D, which are unroofed monuments with either high or low masonry. And then we have the remaining third are field monuments and standing stones, archaeological sites. A vast range of properties then, this is just a snapshot of some of them. And I always like to just show my favourite as well. This is Kilcarden Castle on Lochall. The collections that we've captured as well are really diverse. And unlike a typical museum, we don't have one facility where all of these collections are stored. Our collections are in the properties. We have almost half of them on display. We currently have about 300 documented, so we have a long way to go in terms of what we need to do with the collections. And we have about 250 of these online in a platform called Sketchfab, which I'll talk to you a little bit about later on. So a wide range of different categories of collections again, some very different challenges in terms of how we can document these. And importantly, this is a quote from our asset management plan, which we launched last year. And digital sits at the heart of Hess's corporate ambition, and the application of digital technology in research, management, and stewardship of historic environment assets is core to our work. So, what are our strategic objectives then in digital heritage? This is then. These fall into our corporate plan objectives and tie very closely to what we want to do as an organisation. So these are the four areas that I'm going to talk about in the presentation and how we undertake digital work to align to these themes. First of all, what is digital documentation? There are different names for this term. We call it digital documentation. Other people might call it reality capture. It takes in some forms of surveying. There are lots of different ways we can reference it. But effectively, it's a scientific approach to digitally record objects, sites, structures, and entire landscapes in their present condition, and usually in 3D. This is the point cloud that we get from these techniques. It's measurable. We can convert it into solid surfaces. And then we can really focus on it to give us photorealistic 3D models. It generates potentially huge multi-layered data sets, and really importantly, you can use this data set for lots of different purposes. This can be quite an expensive way to capture information, so to get the maximum value for money, you really have to think about all the different ways you can use this information. In our predecessor, Historic Scotland, we've been active in this area since 2001. So we were a really early adopter of this technology. And personally, I've been working in this since 2007. And it is at the heart of what we do in terms of our digital activities. To give you a bit of background on how we came to the position we're in, back in 2009, we started a project called the Scottish 10, which was a Scottish Government initiative to digitally record that as we had then five World Heritage sites in Scotland, you can see them on the top row, and they said, well, for everyone we do in Scotland, let's do an international site as well, and give that to the international site managers, give that data set to them. So we ended up working at these sites here. Mount Rushmore in America, Rani Kiva in India, Eastern Qing Tombs in China, Sydney Opera House, and various industrial heritage sites in Japan. And the objective of this was to create this information that could be used for conservation and management of these sites. So we did crazy things like this. This is us working with the National Park Service in Mount Rushmore in 2010. This is one of our laser scanners on a custom tripod that we created and then suspended over the site of Mount Rushmore. This was before drones were commercially available. We would do this completely differently now, but this was the best tool that was available to us 10 years ago. That gives you an indication of how quickly this technology is moving. And that gave us a really diverse set of experiences and skills, working with fantastic partners all around the world, learning a lot from them. And we then decided, well, we have a lot of heritage here in Scotland that needs attention as well. We look after these 336 sites and collections. So it then became my team's remit to digitally document all of them. And we call that the Ray Project, after John Ray, who was an explorer who was on the Franklin expedition. So to give them some sort of posthumous recognition. So within my team and our digital innovation team at Historic Environment Scotland, we use a range of different technologies to capture our heritage in 3D. And we use this to assist in conservation, site management, learning, interpretation, accessibility, anything else we can think of. And we use innovative techniques for the benefit of the historic environment. We undertake scientific research in collaboration with others. We do quite a lot of work already with Edinburgh University of benefit to the heritage sector. We collaborate with partners across the world. And we deliver training programmes, community engagement, outreach. And we're here to provide advice and guidance to the sector as well. Some of the things we get up to around our sites with various laser scanners. It's important to get the scanners anywhere you possibly can. The thing with the laser scanners is they are line of sight, so you can't scan through anything, you can't scan the corners, so you have to move the laser scanners to capture as much as you can so you don't have any gaps or shadows in the data, because you want to be able to capture everything to have a complete 3D record. Skills and capacity building is important. And since 2012, we've had paid trainee positions in digital documentation. And then since last year, we've had an additional trainee in digital innovation. This is Sophia, our digital innovation trainee from last year. So it's a one-year paid position with us, and often leads to employment in the sector. So what do we do in terms of understanding and enhancing knowledge? This is where our collaborative research comes in. And this is a project, one of the projects we're working on with the University of Edinburgh and Harry Watts at the moment. This is by Enrique Valero, who's a postdoc researcher here. And we've been working for several years now developing this phase of research. And what we're at the stage now of is we're capturing point clouds, we're translating that into the 3D data set. But what we can do with that is then use machine learning techniques to automatically segment the point cloud information. And this is a point cloud with colour imagery applied to it. So we have to think really about how we can use this in terms of conservation management. So what we decided to do was to develop algorithms to automatically segment this facade. And what I can tell is that there are 3,100 stones in that. Now, if our works teams wanted to find out that information, that's, if they were to physically count all those stones, that's clearly going to take a long time. We might also have to erect a scaffold to do it, which has an expense attached to it. But from this, we can do a scan in about half an hour, maybe, process the data, and get this result really quickly. We can take it a bit further, and we can quantify the amount of mortar that you would need if you wanted to repoint that wall. 1.4 kilometres of mortar in this case. So it gives us a really useful tool to be able to practically demonstrate the benefit of this for conservation purposes. And what we're in the process of doing now is developing a plugin for an open source piece of software that can then make this tool available to anyone that wants to use it. Another research project that we are involved with is Monument Monitor, which is a collaboration with University College down in London. And this is my PhD student, Rosie Brigham, who is undertaking a crowdsourcing citizen science project to effectively see if visitors' photographs can help us monitor remote sites where our mobile teams don't get to as often as we would like. So she has put put up signs at 20 of our properties in Scotland, and we have specific conservation questions that we're looking to answer at these sites. So we've had this project going for about 4 or 5 months now, and she's had over 2,000 submissions already, and she's using machine learning to be able to automatically extract the information that she wants from these images. And she's also looking at using the images to create 3D models of the sites using crowdsourcing. It's picking up some interesting things that we haven't thought as well. It's becoming a way to alert us to heritage crime at our sites. This was an unfortunate case of graffiti on the standing stones on Arran at Macgregor. So what we're finding is people are really enjoying engaging with our heritage in this way, playing a part in helping in its conservation. And hopefully the more people that alert us to incidents like this, we will get the message out that this is a really bad thing to do. Another way we're using this information is to look at how we can integrate digital technologies with traditional skills. Traditional skills are a really important thing for us, so stone masonry, other skills like that, crafts-based focus. And we're the biggest employer of stone masonry apprentices in Scotland, and that's something we want to develop further. So this is a project that we're working on with the Office of Public Works in Ireland, who are in the process of conserving this court building, the Four Courts as it's called, in Dublin. And at the moment, they are looking to replace and recarve stone capitals, which you can maybe just make out at the top of each of these columns. And each one of these capitals is 1 meter cubed in size. This is one that we have recarved already. So what we were going to do was send one of our stonemasons to Ireland, but it was going to take them months, literally, to recarve one of these. There were obviously issues with them being away from home for months. So what we did was we went over and in one day we scanned it and created this model. We then brought that back to Scotland, and what we were able to do was to create a model of it in virtual reality. And we gave that to our stonemasons. And they're now using this rather than looking at a physical copy to create their own version of stone, to carve out their own stone capital. So we now have our stone masons using virtual reality headsets as a training tool. What they then said to us was, well, this is really good, but we would also like a 3D print of it. So we thought, okay, all right, we can do that. Given that this is 1 meter cubed in size, we said, right, well, we can print a quarter of it. So we split up the digital model into different sections. The 3D printer we have is not going to be able to print this big. So we printed it in 11 different parts, glued all of that together to give us a quarter of the capital one-to-one scale. And that as well is being used as a training tool. So this is Anne Robinson, who's our head of digital innovation, and this is Lara Townsend, who's our stonemason. So she's carving this now based on this digital thing. So a really novel way to use the data. And initially we had a lot of skepticism from our stonemasons about how we actually use this. But now that they've seen it and they're working with it, we're getting asked all the time if we can do the prints for them. So moving on to looking at how we use this data for conservation. We always learn of every castle. You can imagine the challenges that we have with managing a site of that size, that scale. It's built on a rock, which has vegetation growing out of it. So we have very accurate laser scan data already for the castle, but that doesn't give us the resolution we need on the rock itself. So we're now working with a company to generate millimeter accurate aerial photogrammetry for the entirety of the rock and the upstanding walls. And I've just got a few images of the 3D model to
show you here. This is just new data that we received just a few days ago. So you can see the resolution that we're able to achieve with photogrammetry on the rock. And this gives us an absolute precise tool now that we can use for margin purposes of the rock there. Another way we're using this for monitoring is up in Orkney at Scalabay. Are you familiar with the site? So it's part of the World Heritage Site up in Orkney. It's a fantastic Neolithic village. It's incredibly close to the coast. When it was built 5,000 years ago, it's probably a kilometre or two away from the coast. But now this is the situation we have, and we're trying to manage it as best as we can. So we first started laser scanning it back in 2010, and we have been recording it as much as we can since then. What we do then is every 2 years we will compare the data sets to previous 2 years and back to the original baseline information that we had. The software that we use lets us quantify the amount of change that's taking place. And this is in a meter scale on the site here you can see. So this is a comparison between 2016 and 2018 data. And what this shows is that we're having some blocks appearing down at the eastern side of the site. Many, many years ago we built a defensive seawall here, right in front of the village, and that is doing its job, it's protecting it. But it looks like it's at the expense of the soft coastline at either side. So these are real quantitative data sets that we can then use to make conservation decisions about how we should better manage this site going forward. If you look at the cumulative change, this is from our baseline data back in 2010 and 2018. You can see that there has been quite significant erosion happening. We're only part of the story here, so we work really closely with Dynamic Coast, which is a Scottish government initiative, to feed that information into the wider data sets that we have, and to look at the longer term changes that are happening at Scalabray. We also integrate scientific data wherever we had with the 3D models that we generate. I mentioned that my background is in science, and that's really important for me if you're trying to bring science into as many of our processes as we can. So this is a little place that not many people know about that we look after. It's called Skirmorley Isle, it's down in Lars. And from the outside, it's just an unassuming little building. Inside, it's got these incredible painted ceilings, painted timber ceilings, and this fantastic stone carved aisle. But we're getting lots and lots of problems with groundwater penetration into the building, and that's then coming out through the stonework and causing it to decay quite substantially, and we're getting lots of salts. So what we've been doing there is working really closely with our scientists to capture the information about moisture in the building, excess moisture, in 3D. And just like a photograph that we can map onto the surface of a point cloud, do the same with the moisture map. So this is the point cloud. And what we can then do is map on that moisture mapping information in 3D. And then here we've done it for the crypt. So what you can see there are areas where purple and blue is particularly damp. The greens are a little bit drier. So we're working closely with our stone conservators here and our conservation architects to make decisions based on the scientific information presented in a 3D visual way. So it just really helps the process and helps to understand the maps, which are quite difficult to interpret in a library. It sets everything in a context and gives it a spatial relationship. We're working at Hill House as well with the National Trust for Scotland. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that. a lot of issues with water interface as well. So here again, we laser scanned the building, and then we worked closely with thermal imagery in this case to pinpoint issues where there was a lot of water ingress, where there was power lines attaching from the building, and where there were other areas where there was damp penetrating. Quite a few scans that we had to do before we could get complete coverage of the building. But mapping on this thermal imagery in 3D has been a really good way of understanding the issues here. So here we have the red areas and the blue. That shows us different thermal issues here. Blue here is the water ingress, and the red being the power line attachment. So again, really useful ways that we can use this information. We now have a dedicated project officer who's working between ourselves and the National Trust to use this digital information in their interpretation where the building is undergoing conservation. The Macintosh building also wanted to do this. I think everyone is familiar with what's happened over there, I'm guessing. We've worked very closely with Glasgow School of Art for many years, so this was quite traumatic event for everyone involved, but for us as well, when the building first went on fire in 2014. Fire took hold on Friday, and on the Saturday, we went into laser scanning. This is what the library looked like the day after the fire. We started laser scanning accompanied by a firefighter, because the building was at this point, and we undertook as many scans as we possibly could before building control shut the building down. This is what we got in terms of our workload. So most of the damage in the first fire, I'm sure you're familiar with this, since we had a second fire which has done significantly more damage than the first. But in the first fire, the extent of damage was in this area here, particularly the upper studios and the library. Building control were particularly worried about this facade here. They thought that there had been significant structural movement in it, and they wanted to take it out. They wanted to remove the whole facade. Luckily, we had some previous laser scans from 2008 from a student project. And we used that in exactly the same way as we doing for scan B to compare to see how much movement there had been specifically in this area where there was greatest concern. So this was the quantifying map that was generated from that. Again, it has a metric scale to side. We can use that to compare. We can look at it on a stone by stone basis. So the stones that are marked with either red or orange, they've moved more than 2 centimetres. Anything green or yellow is less than 2. So the fire started on Friday, we started scanning on Saturday, and by Monday we were able to sit down with this information with building control. And we used that information along with their own analysis to determine that they were only going to remove the very uppermost part of the gable. So that was, we felt, you know, a really good resolution, because it could have been much worse at that point. The whole facade could have just been knocked out. So we translated the 3D information that we had from the point cloud into a 2D CAD drawing. And this is a very typical way of taking the 3D data back to 2D and giving you architectural information. We gave each stone a number, and this is how we've done it. And our stonemason then went up in a really high cherry picker and transferred those numbers onto each individual stone. And then they were taken down stone by stone and removed to a safe location. And ironically, they had gone back up as part of the conservation work before the second fire. Another way the data was used is with plan to settle it. So this was immediately after the fire, and you saw the image of the library. And what was decided very quickly was a forensic archaeology process should take place there to remove safely and record all of the debris in there and try to conserve what they could. So what scan can quickly do is tell you volumes of material. So we calculated that there was approximately 49.5 cubic metres of debris in the library there, and that then informed the forensic archaeology process. This was the library after it was cleared out. Once the whole building was made safe, there was an entire programme of documentation through the non-fire affected part as well, taking in all the plant areas, all the passageways, not just the main rooms of the Macintosh decoration. The lift shaft was documented with laser scanners to give us really accurate dimensions. There was not really any other safe way to get really precise measurements of the diameter of the lift shaft. There weren't any original records that they had for this. So what you can see in green there, this is a cross-section through the point where the whole building with colour applied, but then just the lift shaft highlighted there. We were able to get dimensions for the recreation of a new lift to go in this shaft. Really detailed elevations that we were able to create from this information. And at the time when the students were not able to get back inside the building, what we actually did was to create an exhibition in the adjacent building with all of this information, so that the students and the lecturers and staff and everyone affected would at least have some way of being able to relate to what was in there and what was happening. And that information also fed into the development of the building information model, which was going to be used to manage the building going forward. And taking building information modeling a bit further, are you all familiar with that term, building information modeling? So it's effectively a digital asset management tool. It's a way of being able to tag components in a digital space, in a digital model, and use that for everyday maintenance and management. And we've been doing this for Edinburgh Castle, the palace. Not the whole castle as yet, but too daunting a task, isn't it? So we have our point-click data, and we extract that and put it into a software package called Autodesk Revit. And then we generate these types of model here. And that's been really useful for us to then create information asset lists. So all of this information is about one window in the castle. So that will tell us, you know, where is it? Is it in the load bearing wall? What's the glazing material? What's the frame made from? And then that gives us information to manage the building and the individual assets in it. A lot of virtual reality in different ways within our departments as well. And building information models in VR are helping us to visualise new interventions at historic sites. This is at Stirling Castle. This is the Unicorn Cafe. And we're looking to see whether or not we could redevelop that and make it something a bit better, effectively. So this is the 3D model we've created from laser scanning. And this is the model that our architects have created in Revit, and we've dropped that in. And we can then look at it in a virtual reality environment. So rather than having a 2D representation, you can really immerse yourself in this environment and understand what the intervention would potentially be like. So it's becoming a really useful tool for us, for planning and for managing. So looking at how we use this information to help us share and celebrate our heritage now. Back to Edinburgh Castle. shovel all the snow into this well, and it obviously melted, and we used the water then to survive for another few weeks, and we held out and we won the siege. So there was an account in this account there was a detail of how much water the well could hold. So an interpretation colleague said, do you think you could do anything to find out if that's true? So what we did was, first of all, we suspended our laser scanner over the top, but we thought that's not going to give us the full depth of it. So we put one of our works managers, Mark, down the well on a rope. I'll turn the audio off on this because it's kind of his language isn't the best on it. It was a bit scary down that well. But we gave him one of our laser scanners. Effectively, he just pressed one button. It's a really simple one to operate. It's really lightweight. So we sent that down first, and we sent Mark down the well. This is him standing at the bottom of the well. And what we did with that was we got fantastic 3D data that we could then position the well in within the entirety of the Edinburgh Castle model. So you can see the depth of this thing. It's incredible. And its position. So information that we've never known before. Well, that's not quite true, because we had, in fact, this drawing from before. This was from 1912. It has looked to try to figure out if that historical account was in fact true. So this one, we think, was effectively a surveyor going down that well on a rope in a bucket with tape measures. So not a job that I would have envied him at all. But what we could do then is to compare the pond cloud data that we captured with that drawing, with that survey. And it's pretty good for someone going down there on a bucket and a rope. They did a really good job. And what we were then able to do is to calculate the volume of water that they would have held from the really accurate 3D data. And we could compare that with the amount that was mentioned in the historical document. And it's likely that story was then true. And to give you an idea of the scale, that's Mark at the bottom of the well there. And this is then going to feed into the new interpretation at that particular part of Edinburgh Castle. We use a lot of 3D printing within our teams for handling kits and for increasing accessibility. So these are carved stones at Elgin Cathedral. They're positioned quite high up on the walls. They're obviously not available for anyone to touch. So we have an education officer here. So she said, well, could you print us some from the scans that you have of them? So we printed 30% scale replicas of these, and they're now in her handling kits that she uses with school learners. And this was just a month ago. We've got a really good working relationship with Roslyn Chapel. We've been documenting the site there for many years. So we used a technique called structured light scanning, which is this, to record the apprentice pillars and some of the other features there. And we gave them these 3D prints just recently, and that's specifically for visually impaired visitors who come to the chapel. They're incredibly tactile, these things. Accessibility. Are any of you familiar with Sketchfab? It's effectively like YouTube for 3D models. Okay, that's how we describe it. You can embed URLs on your websites, you can upload your own, you can download models from it in many cases, you can 3D print models from it if you have your own 3D printer. There's lots you can do with it. And we use it as our platform to help share as many of our 3D models as we can. We put on both our sites and our collections objects. Currently we've got about 274 public models and we put out a new model every Friday. So we have a SketchUp Friday hashtag that we've started. So have a look if you want and see what we've got on there. But it's a great tool for us. I don't have sound on this particular connection, but this is Musa Broca from Shetland, and there's While it's a fantastic Iron Age structure on its own, it's extra special because there's a colony of storm petrels nest in it, and they only come out at night, and we even recorded binaural sound there as well, and you can feed that into the sketchfile model, so you can have a virtual experience of what it's like to be there when the birds are nesting there. The sketchfile as well, if you have your own headset, a VR headset, you can view all of these models in virtual reality. This is another model that we have on Sketchfab. So we do a lot of archaeological reconstructions as well. This is Bar Hill Room 4 on the Antonine Wall. What's really important with these archaeological reconstructions is that they are as accurate as we can possibly make them. So for this one, we had many, many discussions with the archaeologists who excavated this site back in the 70s and 80s to make sure that he was as happy as it is. Gamification is a really interesting way of being able to share our information. So software packages such as Unity and Unreal are really popular now for game development. And what we can do is once we have our point clouds, we convert them to 3D models and we can drop them into game environments. And this is absolutely transform the way that we can share data and make it more accessible. So these point clouds are massive. They're really unwieldy data sets. They're difficult to share. So what we've been doing is using gamification of our assets to make them more accessible. This is Maze Howe Chamber Cairn up in Orkney. Any of you are familiar with it? It's again, it's part of the World Heritage Site up there. But it's quite difficult to get inside. You have to crawl through a passageway to get in. So people with physical disabilities are sometimes not able to get inside. And we can also only fit about 20 people in at a time. So if we have a whole coach load of people coming, they cannot get inside. So what we did there was to develop this free app for it. You can download it on the app stores at Explore Maze Howe. Have a look, tell us what you think. And you can drive it yourself, you can explore it. And inside as well, the Vikings broke into Maze Howe and sheltered from a storm in there, and they carved some fantastic graffiti, and that's what you saw in the video there just now. So we can show what this graffiti was like on the inside. And in the visitor centre there, we've got our visitor services staff are trained in how to use VR, so they can give visitors a physical right inside a VR headset. But people don't like VR, so we can have it on a tablet instead. So lots of different ways that we can make our sites more accessible. And I showed you a model there from the Antonine Wall, and another app that we've created, again, if you just search for Antonine Wall, it's free to download as well. And this is one we've created with partners in Austria and Germany. And the 3D model, the reconstruction that I showed you, this is now used in a geo-direct way. So if you go to Bar Hill, Roman Fort, there's not really a huge amount to see there. It's some lumps and bumps in the ground, really. But if you have the app, it will then alert you when you get to a particular location, and you can review a virtually reconstructed model in 3D on the app to show you what the buildings would look like there. You can also get 3D models of some of the finds that were found at various spots around the site there. And then, nearly come to an end, but this is one that we've done a lot of work on, this fourth bridge. Quite a challenge to laser scan, as you can probably imagine. It's a live route away, because it's over water. Lots and lots of challenges there. We again worked with local access teams. We had laser scanners mounted on boats. Lots of different things. But we eventually managed to capture all, and we've got this incredible point cloud, which is really accurate. We're using this just now with Network Rail to look at the electrification of the track, to look at measurements that are needed, so lots of really practical uses. But what we were tasked with was, by the Scottish Government, was to make this data available to every school child in Scotland. I thought, this is a massive data set. terabytes of data, and we were going to do this. So we worked with a really brilliant digital learning specialist, and our modelling teams simplified the 3D models we had and developed educational themes based on the model. So you might look at tasks on how to paint the bridge, you might have to climb it, but importantly, it all ties back to lesson plans that have a curriculum for excellence focus, this one on social studies. And we took that a bit further and developed from our models coding-based lesson plans using Scratch and 3D modelling programs based on the Tinkercad. And these are programs that are available in schools. All school children have access to these. So these are really important tools that can be used by anyone now across Scotland, and they were launched by our Deputy First Minister last year. They're all available on the Fourth Bridges website if any of you are interested to download them and have a look. We're based at the Engine Shed out in Stirling, and so many people come to us. It's free to come in and have a look, find out more about traditional skills, traditional materials, science, digital technologies. The main part of our interpretation is this giant augmented reality map. You can like that as you come in, it's free to come in, and you can find out about the historic buildings of Scotland. Our aim here is to create a world-class conservation hub, which raises conservation standards, but really to be a centre of excellence in heritage innovation, and be a fun place to help foster collaborations. This is the type of stuff that you might see if you come to visit us. There's always crazy stuff going on. But really, you know, really critical to that is using digital innovations to bring our historic environment to life. We hosted a big conference last year called DigiDoc, which was an international conference looking at all types of digital technologies, how we could possibly use them in a historic context. But on the back of that, we also ran DigiFest, which was a festival to try and engage young people with the historic environment via digital technologies. And we had gaming companies in, we had Assassin's Creed in, talking about all of the gaming environments that we do, trying to look at how we can engage people with heritage in that way. We looked at 3D printing, stop motion, how we can look at all of these different things that we normally associate with heritage, but bring them into a heritage context. We have robotic days and coding days and all sorts of things. So this is going to come back in 2021, so a couple of years will be yet, but keep it in mind and hopefully we'll see some of you there. So just to sum up then on what we were, our thoughts are in this area. So it's really important for us to make digital heritage about how we can make the information useful for the understanding, protection and enjoyment of our historic environment. It's at the heart of what we do, and it closely aligns to the Scottish Government and our HES corporate priorities and values. Support from our senior management is really important because they can really see and understand the potential and the value of what we're doing in digital. But we have to be strategic in what we do, and there have to be strong practical applications for the historic environment. We can't just use technology for technology's sake. You know, it's very, you know, you look at the Gartner hype cycle and look and see what's new on the current technology, but it has to really relate back to heritage and it's a strong application for us. We have to have multiple uses of the data sets to deliver value for the money invested. And research and innovation are really key to driving delivery. We still have challenges. We want to help upskilling in the sector. Funding, we know, is an issue for many people, including ourselves too, and resourcing. So we want to try and help in that wherever we can. But our goal really is about mainstreaming this technology and normalising the use of digital technologies in the heritage sector and integrating them protection. need to know any more, scan the QR code and download this publication, or pick one up if you want to get in chat. Lots of more examples of what we do there and some different introductions to different technologies that I've talked about and when you might use a particular one or a particular project. So that's all from me. Happy to take any questions.
Season, sorry. your work leads me to what may be a slightly wider question, you might not be able to answer, but you're creating vast amounts of data here, which leads me to think about archiving this stuff for the future. Now, you're starting, which you know we might start to think about a 100-year cycle thing. You're starting with relatively new data, so you can effectively set an archiving policy for 100 years hence, as it were. But a very wise man told me once that that 100-year cycle, we should actually think that we're in the middle of that cycle. So we're thinking ahead for 50 years, but we're also looking back 50 years. So as far as Historic Scotland is concerned, what is their position on being able to read digital data from, you know, Elsteeth, maybe even 10 years ago, that's the formats that, you know, my home computer can't read anymore. So what happens with all this data for being able to access old stuff as well as creating new stuff?
It's a challenge. It's huge quantities of data. We have dedicated servers currently sitting at about 250 terabytes of 3D information. We have point clouds and 3D models. We have that securely stored. It's not an archive. We have it backed up. What we make sure we do is we record them within, we sort of save all of our models in archive format. Okay. There's been a lot of discussion about what archive format should be for this data. So we save in non-proprietary ASCII format. That's the best we can do. We don't have all the answers. Our colleagues in our heritage directorate, our digital archivist, and Peter might want to add something here. You know, they have different challenges with 3D data that they have in Canmore, for example. But metadata is an important thing as well. We've got our own metadata that we record to make sure that we can access this information going forward, and it's got useful information in it for people. We commissioned our first data in 2001, and we tried to buy some of this a few years ago when we opened it. So luckily, the company that we commissioned that for is still available, so they were able to, they had written bespoke software for it, so they were able to write a new conversion, so we've now got all of that legacy data in a format that we should be able to access going forward. But it's definitely an ongoing challenge, and it's a huge challenge for the sector, and there's not an easy solution for it, unfortunately.
I just remember that somebody else comes back to identify the age to understand the conditions which the animals capture now, and then storage it into the crash reports and ascension because of the skills gap there. You're teaching traditional skills, you're championing traditional skills, trying to teach them, train them, refresh them. You need new skills, you need as well as data scientists, software scientists, hackers, people who can hack that data in 35 years' time.
Yeah,
how do we bridge the gap? Is the gap increasing rather than the average?
I think people are thinking of it, people are now alive to it, and there are new courses popping up all the time that are seeking to look forward and hopefully fill some of those gaps. So we're working closely with UCL on a new data science and cultural heritage master's course, for example, which is bringing in software engineers and people computing scientists who have given them a heritage background, a heritage understanding. So it's thinking about where there are, you know, opportunities in academia that can look to fill that gap. Just be as conscious of it as we can, I think, and try and get the message out as best as we can.
Change the level of course again. Anyone?
because us and an organisation in America that we work with, that we're pretty much making a deal with this. As technology become a lot more accessible and available, people are obviously doing more of it now, so there are initiatives like this, you know, in many countries around the world. I think ourselves in France are the only two that are currently committed to documenting all the sites that we have in 3D. So that's still, you know, we're still up there. But it's, you know, there are more people doing it now, which is a really good thing. That's what we want to be promoting. So lots of companies doing it now as well. Our approach we find is quite different to what a street work survey company would do. So still quite a gap there. But you know, there are now specific heritage companies who are doing this thing more from a cultural heritage perspective.
Yeah. Does your organisation work with smaller independent trustees companies? Would it be interesting working, for example, the hospital for the house trust in Arbroath to do 3D scanning and preservation? There's an interesting architectural piece there called the Patrick Phase of Mortuary Chapel, which contains a lot of blood balance and some architecture, mm-hmm. and it's undergoing a lot of ideas in the middle of the sandstone.
Yeah.
Do you usually work with trusts like that to preserve non-historical violence on the property?
Well, one important thing you said to preserve, so I'm just going to pick up on that, because this is not about preserving the sites. This is a tool to help in their conservation. We're always really careful that we say this is not digital preservation. That's something completely different in terms of archive. But yes, to answer your question, we do it where we can, but we're a really small team, and this kind of stuff is our bread and butter. So if we can't help it ourselves, we'll give advice on how you can maybe do it yourselves with cameras, you know, and photogrammetric techniques, or we can recommend ways that you might be able to get grants to get other companies to help you with it. But we can definitely give advice and help where we can, I guess. Message me on Twitter. See if we can do it.
Cameras and photography. It's a nice sounding Sony camera on there. Anyway, anyone else, or we're heading towards refreshment time or break the weather time, but any final questions, or we save those for drinks afterwards. One final one.
I was curious about your internship or other things, like how we get in touch about those opportunities.
They're going to be, we get posted on the internship website on the Historic Scotland vacancies page, and I'll just speak about it myself. It's one a year, so we started our last one in August, so the next one will be advertised probably about May, June next year. And they are paid positions, like I say, for a year.
Thank you all very much for coming. Thank you, I should say, thank you very much to Hannah Brown for hosting and my keeping you the better end of the refreshments. So our next talk is a month again, 6th December, I think. How to do GIS so that you can retire, maybe. Ways of working. There's also a human angle to GIS, a nice way. So, yes, it's all about human past and human futures. So, thanks all for coming. It just remains basically to say we'll look out for that. But just to say thank you very much to Lynn for your interesting talk. Indeed, thank you.